Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, where was Barbara when she got the idea to write the multicolored hat? Barbara Dean is a British expat who lives with her husband in a small town in the Spanish province of Alicante on the Mediterranean coast. She's an active member of the community there and also a writer. Her children's book, The Multicolored Hat, has been published in both English and bilingual editions, and Twins Reflections is a book of poetry written together with Lydia Lustig, her twin sister. In this program, Barbara speaks with us about the books and what growing up with an identical twin has meant to her throughout her life.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Barbara.
Lovely to be here, Linda.
First, could you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what it was like growing up with an identical twin, because you're very close to your twin sister.
Yes, I am. And we grew up in a place called Edgware, which is quite a Jewish area, really. And we went to the local school, and we were always known as the twins. We didn't seem to have our own identity. And unfortunately, our elder sister was known as the twins' sister, which was unfortunate for her. But we were always together, always, when we were younger.
Because you were very close, but did it ever bother you that you were part of a twin and that you might not have had your own individual identity?
Well, do you know something? I never knew any different. I always thought that we were different from other people because we always have a best friend. And it wasn't really until my twin got married that I felt very, very alone and vulnerable. But do you know what? I think it did me the world of good because it made me an individual. And before that, I was never an individual. I was just part of a couple. But then I didn't know any different.
Do you have any special anecdotes or anything that you'd like to share with us about when you were growing up?
Yeah, only when we were at school and we used to giggle a lot. And we even went to grammar school. And I don't know how we got there because we were both very hard of hearing. And in those days, you didn't test the hearing as you do now. And my parents didn't really know. And we used to sit at the back of the class giggling. And the teacher used to say, "Oh, you twins, will you stop giggling?" And after that, you know, we never did our homework or anything. And at the end of the term, my parents were called in and they were asked to remove the twins from school as they were a disturbance. But it didn't really bother us. We were never sort of bothered. We loved dancing, and that's as long as we can dance, we were happy.
Did you begin to write as a child?
Yes, we always kept a diary, both of us. We've got diaries going back over the years. I must have about 50, 60 diaries. Yes, maybe more, I don't know, but I've still got them and I've kept them from when I was a child. Yes, we've always liked writing. Both of us like writing, actually. We always wrote poetry. We never sent out a birthday card that didn't have a poem on it. Even if it was a soppy duh-duh-duh poem, to us it was our poems. And we never thought to send out a card without a poem on. It just came naturally to us.
Tell us a little bit about what you did before you came to Spain.
Before I came to Spain, I had really very interesting jobs. I was assistant fashion editor on a magazine. It was called She Magazine. Now I think it's called Elle. I think it's a French magazine. But I was assistant fashion editor. And I got the job because I was working in an advertising agency. And my boss was the Romantic Novelist of the Year at that time. And I liked writing even then. And she used to stay behind in the office and she used to write her books. And I used to stay behind and pretend I was writing books just to try and impress her. And one day she came over, she said, Barbara, you like writing, don't you? I said, yes, I do, very much. So she said, okay, I'm going to get you an interview for this magazine. And I mean, I wasn't really into fashion at all. I'm still not really into fashion, but somehow I got the job, probably because I took the pants off. But anyway, I got the job and it was a wonderful job. And we had a wonderful time. I used to arrange the photography for the models and accessorize the clothes. And at the time, I used quite famous people. Cliff Richard, I used, and Harry Secombe, who was a very famous comedian. And my page was called Fatty for the Fatty Figures. But I don't think you could call it that now. It wouldn't be correct, would it? It wouldn't be politically correct. And then after that, I worked for an agony aunt.
I think Americans would kind of know that as Dear Abby.
Yes, exactly. And I used to answer all her correspondence. She used to go on TV every morning, and I used to handle her correspondence for her. And then after that, I did freelance writing. I've always been in some sort of writing, except when I was a film extra. And I appeared in TV serials, and that was great fun.
Both you and your sister ended up moving to Mediterranean countries. You moved to Spain and your sister to Israel. How did that come about? And can you tell us a little bit about where you live now in Spain?
Yes, what happened was, unfortunately, my husband had business problems, and so we were really forced to make a decision. And the decision, we already had a part-time home here, like a holiday home, small home, and my husband wasn't happy with what he was doing, and so I made the decision to let our home out in England and to go to Spain for 6 months as a trial, and it worked out very well. And luckily, it was towards his retirement time. He was nearly 61, so we were able to retire, with our pension. And it goes further in Spain anyway. And that's why we came here, and we've been here 20 years now. We really love it. And my sister went to Israel because her youngest daughter was in Israel, and they were very close, and they've always been Zionist minded. And so they ended up in Israel. She's been there 7 years now, and we speak to each other every week. But we really miss each other. And at the end of the conversation, it's always hard to say goodbye.
Can you tell us a little bit about where you live now?
It's a place called Ciudad Quesada. It's quite near Alicante, about 45 minutes. There's quite a lot of expats here, which I'm not really that keen on because I think it's nicer to be with Spanish people. But we chose to live in a village not as small as a Spanish village. And, we've got five supermarkets, we've got beautiful beaches. We have a very easy, simple life. We play cards. We belong to the U3A, which is
What
the
is that?
university.
What is
That's
the
the
U3A?
university. It's the University of the Third Age. It's for people of 55 plus. It's international. It started in Australia, and it's for people of 55 plus who are like-minded, want to do cultural things, want to do interesting things, and they share their interests with each other. So anybody who is a member who has had an activity which they're good at, like I like playing cards, so I started a canasta group. Somebody else likes walking, so there's a walking group. There's an art group. There's all sorts of activities that you can become involved in. And it's a good way of meeting people too.
Are you at all involved with the Jewish community in Alicante?
Well, we were very involved with the Alicante Synagogue. We were on the board at one time, and we used to go all the time. But we are about 45 minutes away from Alicante. So unfortunately, as we've got older, it's got more and more difficult to go to the synagogue. We're still members, and we try and go whenever we can, like high holidays and things like that. But we can't attend regularly. And when we first came to Spain, we were looking for some Jewish people, And we were absolutely amazed. I put an advert in the paper and said, Shalom Havarim. And I got 120 replies. And we started our own little club. And it was fabulous for about 8 years. And then unfortunately, people seemed to drop off, either dying or moving back to England or something like that. But it was wonderful while it lasted.
Were they mostly English?
They were all English, yes, they were all English.
Let's talk a little bit about the books. First, let's talk about Twins Reflections, which is a book of poetry that I think is a very interesting concept because you and your sister both have poems in this book, separate poems. And I was
Yes.
wondering when you both started writing the poetry and the poems that are included in the book. And when you decided to compile them into a book.
Well, as you know, we were separated because I was here and she was in Israel, and we felt very sad about it. And we wanted to try and bring ourselves together somehow again. And we came up with this idea because we've both always written poetry. And so we said, let's get all our poems together and put them in a book. So that's what we did. And we wrote other poems especially for the book, and we're still writing more poems, and we hope to do another book. It's called Twins Reflection because obviously we reflect reflection of each other, because we are actually mirror twins. She's got a left-hand parting, I've got a right-hand parting. She's left-handed, I'm right-handed. So we called it Twins Reflection. And we hope to be writing another one together as well. We thoroughly enjoyed doing that together. It was great fun.
Well, it's interesting because when I read it, I thought of reflections as thoughts because it also is.
Oh, yes, that's true. Reflections as thoughts. Yes, good idea. Yes, it could be that too, of course.
Over how much time were the poems written? Because there's one poem that's about your parents' 25th anniversary, which obviously was many years ago.
Many years ago. That's probably one of the first ever poems I've written. It's really funny. And I think it was actually the first poem I'd ever written. It was their anniversary. It must have been about 100 years ago. I can't remember how long ago, because they've been dead many, many years. And I just felt it so strongly. I had to put it into verse. And I think that was one of my first poems.
You must have been quite young at the time.
I was probably about 18, a teenager, you know. But we've just always liked writing poems. I don't know why. We've liked writing songs as well. We used to write songs, but we're not very musical. We can't sing and we can't play an instrument, but we used to like listening to songs and writing songs.
The poetry is very easy to understand. It's not obscure and it all rhymes.
No.
And in one of the poems,
No.
Lydia writes about how difficult it is to get everything to rhyme.
Yeah, funny. It's I find it very easy to find things to rhyme, and I'm a bit concerned sometimes that my poems are very simplistic, and people might think, oh, that's a bit silly, because you do read poetry that's very obscure, and I can't quite honestly get to grips with it. You know, like Kipling and people like that. I sometimes can't understand the poetry, what they've written. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I like to write poetry that's easy to understand, very colloquial.
Also, a lot of it is very personal and autobiographical, and the reader learns a lot about you and your sister's childhood and adult lives. Could you comment on that?
Oh yes, because we used to write poetry personally to our friends and family, that's why. And also we wanted this book to be more of a legacy for our children rather than actually making money out of it. That was never the intention. The intention was as a legacy for our children, and we felt that we'd contributed something to our world. Probably that was the thought. And our children are very delighted that we've written it, and obviously they'll keep it forever. It's a memoir, really, of our childhood, if you like, growing up.
Let's talk about The Multicolored Hat, which is the other book that you really wrote for children. I was wondering how you got the idea for writing the book.
Well, I was working for a nursery at the time, and I love little kids. I love old people and I love little children. And I was working at the nursery. I was helping a friend out actually at the time, and I got very involved with the children, and I loved telling them stories. And I didn't realize until I told them stories how much I enjoyed it. And suddenly, one of the kids was wearing a hat, and I took it off his head. We were all sitting in a circle on the floor, and I threw it in the circle. And I said, "Okay, first one to get the hat." And they grabbed the hat. One of them grabbed it. I said, "Okay, how do you feel now? Do you feel changed? Do you feel excited?" And I asked him his feelings about wearing the hat. And that's how it came about. And I thought afterwards, oh, that's a good idea. I'll have a hat that flies around the world, flies around, lands on children's heads, and when it lands there, it changes them. And it makes them happier or gives them courage or, something like that, sense of well-being. So that's what I did, and that's how Multicolored Hat started, really. And I didn't have grandchildren at the time, so all the people in the book, all the children used in the book, they're my twin sister's grandchildren in the book. All the names are her grandchildren's names.
What age children is the book intended for?
From 4 years of age, about 4 years upwards. But then if they're not reading, then obviously the parent can read it for them. But I also have had the hat made, the multicolored hat made. And living in Spain, it was difficult, but I tried to go around various nurseries wearing the hat and being Mrs. Get a Hat, who is the main character in the book. I am wearing little glasses and pretending to be her and reading the book. And I had to have an interpreter because my Spanish wasn't good enough. And I did that for quite a while. It was good fun. And then sometimes they bought the book, sometimes they didn't. But I just enjoy doing it because there's a bit of a drama queen in me as well.
As you mentioned before, the hat helps people overcome their problems or gives them confidence. It reminded me a little bit of The Wizard of Oz.
Yes, that's a good similarity. Yes, that's true.
Because
Yes.
in The Wizard of Oz, I guess as most of our listeners would know, Oz, who is really a non-existent magician or something,
Whimsical.
gives people something that really, on the surface, has no value, but for them, it helps them to overcome whatever kind of problems that they have. And I was wondering if maybe in future editions you would think of including a teacher's guide or a parent's guide for discussion, because I really think that it's got a lot more depth than it seems to have on the surface. You know, like what problem did each person have and how did the hat help solve it?
Exactly. That's what I've put in the book. They had all different problems. And one, just as an example, one child had red hair and he was always being taunted for his red hair. And he was out walking with his dog and Mrs. Get a Hat's hat flew off and he found it on the dog's head. So he put it on himself and he asked his mum if he could wear it for school. And his mum said, yes, okay. And when he went to school, nobody noticed his red hair because they were just looking at the hat. And so it made him forget that they were taunting him or used to taunt him about his hair.
And after that, his red hair is no longer a problem for him.
No, it was no longer a problem. He didn't care anymore. He realized that they were just being silly, and he had the hat. But of course, the hat blew off again. So I'm not sure what happened to him after that. But the hat flew off again and went off onto the next child's head and solved his problems.
And Aside from, I think, giving rise to discussion about these things, the book is unusual because it encourages the readers to participate. On the one hand, it has pages that the children can color in, and you also have a website that people can go to get extra copies of these pages. And also at the end of the book, you encourage the readers to contact Mrs. Gedahat, who, as you mentioned, is the main character, and also to send her their pictures. I really like that. Have you heard from any of them, any of these readers?
I did in the beginning. Unfortunately, that website is now obsolete, I must tell you, Linda. Unfortunately, it went with the publisher, but I could try and get a website up again. But it was a lovely idea. And yes, I did hear from some people, and they sent me their photos, and it was really lovely. I used to ask photos of them and ask them to send me their coloured photos when they finished the coloured pictures.
Can you tell us anything about some of these people that you heard from?
Oh, well, they were from different places. There were two or three from Spain because the book has also been published in Spanish.
Where were some of the others from?
Oh, just from England, English children. From and I had one from schools. A whole school did the pictures, and they sent me pictures from the whole school, which was lovely.
Now let's talk about the bilingual version. What gave you the idea to write a bilingual version?
Well, I suppose because living in Spain, I thought, what a good idea. What about the children here, reading about Mrs. Getahat? And so I have tried to get it into the schools here. But unfortunately, they have their own school libraries. They're not allowed to buy books outside of school. But the idea was when my husband and I were learning Spanish, we were always told to use children's books, read children's Spanish books to help us with our language because it's simple language. And so I hope that this book can also be used by adults. And I've been told it has been used by adults to help them with their Spanish or to help them with their English if they are Spanish, because it's simple words used for children. And I think it's a very good idea, what we were told in the class. And we bought quite a few Spanish children's books. And so that really gave me the idea to have it translated into Spanish. And it's called El Sombrero Multicolor. And one side of the book is the pages in English, and the other side is in Spanish.
So, can you describe it to us, the bilingual version?
Well, it's exactly the same as the English version, except as I say, the left-hand side is in English, and the right-hand side is exactly the same in Spanish. That's basically the difference. And the front cover is in Spanish.
Does it also have the coloring book at the back?
Yes, it still has the colouring. Yes, it does.
Do you know if, anyone is actually using it for teaching language, either English or Spanish, or to adults or to children?
Well, I took it to a local school where the children were about 11 or 12, and she said she was going to use it, and I went back and it was still sitting in the drawer, and she explained that they're not allowed to, unfortunately, use books. As I said before, they have to use books that are given to them, that the list that's on their list, they're not allowed to use books outside their list. And she said it was such a shame because she'd like to have used it. I also tried to get into language schools for adults, to see if they could use it. But as I belong to U3A, a lot of the people on U3A who are learning Spanish obviously bought it as well because it would help them. And I also did a few talks here on my career. And I used to sell them there as well.
Finally, is there anything else that you would like to add that we might have left out?
I'd like to have made the multicolored hat into a cartoon for TV because I think it would have been absolutely perfect. And I tried loads and loads of different places, even Disney, but Disney won't accept it because they have their own personal cartoons. Because I thought I have actually got the hat actually made. So I thought it would be really lovely to have used it in a cartoon. And I'd like to continue her adventures. I'd like to continue the adventures of the hat. It had a very happy ending because Mrs. Getter Hat was very lonely. And when all these children found the hat, they had something in common. And she was very upset about her hat. And so she put a notice in a window, "Anybody who has seen my hat, please come for tea on Sunday." And these children read it and they all went along for tea on Sunday. And she said, "Good, I'm never going to be lonely again." And the hat blew out the window again. So it was off on another adventure. So I think I should continue that.
I think that's an excellent idea. Are you working on anything now specifically?
Yes, I'm working on my memoirs. I've done about 9,000 words. And I'm writing also trying to explain what it is like to be a twin, because I've never not been a twin, and someone who isn't a twin, it might find it very hard to understand the feelings between twins. I know some twins aren't very close, but my sister and I are very close.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, lovely to talk to you, Linda. Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is English Corner at RadioSephirod.com. See you next week.